From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
Our guest is Jonathan Johnson, CEO of Overstock.com and president of Medici Ventures. Now, what's behind the meteoric rise of Overstock.com, and what's the importance of blockchain technology for immutable election voting results, or maybe democratizing banking for all? And how about the important role that blockchain could play in the record keeping of vaccinating a planet full of people? Well, our next guest will help us answer those questions and more. Jonathan Johnson, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
John, thanks for having me on again. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you back. Your organization was formed in 1999. You've been with them since 2002. What's it like to be part of a company that's grown from a small startup to a publicly traded company with over $1.8 billion in sales and almost 2,000 employees?
John, it has been the adventure of a lifetime. I've learned and grown as the company has grown, and my positions have changed, and I think I'm a better person. I'll tell you, Overstock is bigger now than what you talked about. And though we're a publicly traded company, we continue to run our business with the same innovative mindset that got us started. That's how we got to where we are today, focused on sustainable, profitable growth.
You know, I've got two favorite leather chairs. I finally wore them out after 20 years. And I bought two new leather chairs on Overstock and two Orientals. And I've got to tell you, the thing that impressed me the most, first of all, I know there's a lot of moving pieces to the fulfillment of that order, but it certainly seems seamless. And one of the things that I would mention to you is that you really over, and it's not an over communication, but you really communicate well with package got picked up here. We're going to drop it off then. You should see the package by 2 o'clock, you know, those sorts of things. And it reminds me from my business when I was in a technical fulfillment type business a long time ago that we used to talk about, you know, how much communication should we have? And I've always believed you over communicate because no one's ever been bothered by the communication of their package and when that's coming.
You know, when someone buys something, they're eager to get it and they want to know when it will be there. We're largely a furniture company. And so, you know, it doesn't come this afternoon if you order it this morning. And we're big believers in setting expectations correctly. The most important thing for our customers is knowing when they're going to get it and then keeping those expectations updated so they can be there when that chair, when that rug, when that couch shows up.
Well, this is a science technology show. What are the technical business problems that offer the most challenges over the next 5 years?
Well, the biggest challenge, I think, to any business, and it's not necessarily technical, is working and collaborating remotely while maintaining the right culture. That's what everyone's faced today. But I think one of our biggest technical challenges is getting shipping right. During the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been more of a push to e-commerce. People have migrated there, and it means carriers have become the choke point. And there was a lot of talk earlier in the fall that this holiday season would be shipageddon, that there'd be a lot of delays due to carriers being overloaded. And in fact, I saw in the Wall Street Journal just today that UPS has told certain retailers that they're not going to be able to ship on time. For us, we avoided that by being really forthright with our carriers, saying, here's where we expect demand. Please have carriers ready for us. Beyond that, it's personalizing the customer experience through technologies like machine learning. And then, of course, always figuring out how to reduce inefficient and expensive middlemen. And frankly, you mentioned it in your opening, that's where blockchain technology comes into place. You can remove middlemen in more transactions than you can without it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. You know, we're always trying to figure out what might be coming in the future. And that's, of course, hard to predict. But we had a futurist on recently talking about autonomous vehicles and autonomous delivery. And one of the things that he said was that everybody's pretty excited about autonomous vehicles, you know, to go pick up the babysitter and drop her off, him off, you know, all the different things that you can have the advantages of autonomous driving. But he said what people really want is they want stuff delivered to them in a cost-effective manner, and they don't want to necessarily go out and get it. So he said, for an example, that our sidewalks are so underutilized. People only walk on the sidewalks from like 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. So there will be small autonomous vehicles that will be delivering on sidewalks. And they can do that on the graveyard shift. And that's, of course, not here today, but it's right. It's not too far away. Have you thought about integrating the delivery pieces, or will you rely on the vendors that you have these relationships with?
So today we mostly rely on the vendors. But, you know, John, one of the reasons I love being on your show is I always learn things. And you're so forward thinking. As delivery methods improve, if carriers aren't doing it, that's where we're going to need to step up and do it. But today, in our model, using the third-party delivery vendors makes the most sense. And I hope they get to the place where drones are the way that they're doing it, or, you know, graveyard shift, driving on sidewalks are the way they're doing it. What's so exciting is that innovation continually makes our life better and makes the shopping and online experience better every day.
And what lessons have you drawn from Amazon? And perhaps what lessons has Amazon drawn from Overstock.com?
Well, I mean, Amazon is the king of e-commerce. And so, you know, we look to them. We see that they're getting packages closer to the customer every day. For us, we've learned that speed of delivery is important, but accuracy of delivery time is more important. We're not selling toothpaste and toilet paper. We're selling, you know, tables and rugs and things that don't necessarily need to get there the next day. And I think Amazon looks to that too, to figure out accuracy of delivery is important for certain types of products. Speed of delivery is probably more important for other types of products.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jonathan, on election night, November 3rd, 2020, I was watching the returns, listening to talking heads talking about the returns, but they're also talking about some challenges that were being drawn to the voting system. And I kept going back to a conversation we had with you in 2018 about the promise of blockchain in a democratic society that needs an immutable record of results that are simple, can be done on a mobile device, and can be done 24/7 without additional layers of identification. For folks that missed that particular interview that we did, that conversation, can you talk about this underlying technology, blockchain, and the application of voting and what it might be able to do for us in the future?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, John. We used to call the internet the information superhighway because it let us transfer information freely and frictionlessly on the internet. When I send you an email or a picture or a video or anything on the internet, I'm sending you a copy. You don't mind that you get a copy. When I send you something that's an asset, whether that's money or a vote or something that can't be spent twice, we have middlemen in between because we don't want to send copies. Well, blockchain technology might be called the digital asset superhighway because it's a technology that lets me transfer money to you without banks in the middle. It lets me cast my vote without different machines and people in between the vote counter and the vote caster. Blockchain technology has advanced quite a bit since we last talked in the voting space, where there are now digital applications. People can use a smartphone in a safe and secure way to cast a vote in an election to know for sure their vote was correctly counted as cast, and for to create a paper audit trail for auditors to look at afterwards. And you might say, wow, that seems too futuristic. It was used in four different states, in different counties in different states, in the 2020 presidential election, including in Utah County. For people that were overseas or disabled, they were allowed to vote on a mobile phone using blockchain-based voting to cast a vote in the presidential, congressional, and every other election. Really quite fascinating. And frankly, if it was used more broadly, we would know the results of elections more quickly, and we would be more assured that they were accurate, because you and I as voters could know that our vote was correctly counted as we cast it.
Yeah, and Jonathan, I keep thinking about a couple, many couples in our country that are both working a couple of jobs, and they're trying to do the best they can for their kids, and they've got, of course, spent time with them in this new virtual world and those sorts of things, and voting sites that are only open certain hours, and they've got to wait in line, and they may not have transportation to that, and that, you know, those sorts of things. For the more broader application of this type of application, is politics a barrier to that being successful?
Well, I think politics is always a barrier, but I think 2020 will tear down some of those barriers. Historically, it's been Democrats who've been eager to make it easier for people to vote. Now, with the 2020 elections, I think it's Republicans who want to say, we want to make sure the votes were counted correctly. Blockchain technology addresses both of those systems. And frankly, it'll be a cheaper way for governments to collect and count votes. Today, voting is largely a hardware business. Mm-hmm. You buy machines where you can pull the lever or touch the screen. You buy counting machines. That's all hardware. Well, today the hardware that we can use for voting is in your pocket, or it's in a pocket or a purse. It's a smartphone. And it's become a software as a service business, or should become a software as a service business, where it's much cheaper for county clerks to buy this software instead of replacing expensive hardware. So I think the political part has become, I think, interesting now that both parties see the value of it. And the expense part, which is something that always stops new technology coming into government, should be solved as we look at it as a software as a service, as opposed to buying more expensive hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a conversation in 2018 also about developing and third world populations that do not have a traditional bank account. And I was really surprised by that and fascinated by it. Roughly what percentage of developing and third world populations don't have a bank account, don't have a traditional bank account?
Well, it depends by region. In the Caribbean, it's 40%. In South America, it's 70%. In Africa, it's more than 90%. And these aren't people who don't have addresses and jobs. It's just that we've made banking so exclusive, particularly as we've had anti-terrorism laws, that it's hard. It's easier for banks to turn people down than to let them join the 21st century. If you don't have a bank account, you don't have a safe place to store your money. It's probably in a shoebox in your sock drawer, or maybe it's a safe in your closet. But you also don't have a way to access digital money. For those of us with bank accounts, a credit card is digital money. You can go to Costco and, you know, buy a full cart worth of stuff without bringing a gangster wad of cash. Or you can shop online at Overstock and use your credit card. Blockchain will bring the equivalent of bank accounts to a digital wallet, where you'll have a place to store blockchain-based digital money on a digital wallet that lets you spend it without having, you know, physical cash in hand. And I think the pandemic has really shown a lot of countries the need for easier distribution of subsidies in cash, which can be done through a digital dollar or some kind of digital money that doesn't need to necessarily flow through a bank to get to the end user.
Jonathan, are traditional banks concerned that they will lose their utility?
Well, they should be if they're not. I know that there are central banks around the world that are looking at the digital dollar or a digital type of currency that's based on blockchain technology. We're involved in a company that will be launching a pilot this month in December for the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. I think this technology is probably more likely to be adopted quickly in developing countries where people don't have bank accounts than it is in developed countries. But once it starts getting developed, I think even the Fed at some point is going to be issuing a digital dollar that will make banks less necessary. They probably won't become obsolete, but less necessary and less useful.
So take us forward a little bit. What will the banking experience, or what could the banking experience be like 10 years from now?
Well, I think you probably have access on your smartphone to all your funds, much like we do with Venmo today, but without the banks in between. And that will cut down costs because banks are an intermediary, a middleman, if you were. The middlemen always add friction. Friction in the form of cost, friction in the form of time, sometimes frictions in the form of mistake or even mischief. 10 years from now, I think we've got a digital dollar that you can hold on your smartphone without a bank. And when I want to transfer it to you, you know I have it. I don't need a bank in the middle to say, yep, Jonathan's got $10 in his account. Goes to the bank, goes to Venmo, goes to your bank. Ultimately, it's in your account. All that middleman, all those intermediary get eliminated.
Okay. And what role can blockchain play in the record keeping of vaccinating a whole planet full of people?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Part of what I hear about vaccines is people don't want the government to know who's been vaccinated, who's not been vaccinated. That should be personal data. Again, with blockchain technology, you can have all of your medical files on your smartphone in a safe, secure way, and you can prove to the store you want to enter, to the sports arena, to the airline you want to get on, that you've been vaccinated, and show them just that. They don't hold that information any longer than showing them that you have it. I really think that blockchain technology can become a health passport. We've invested in a company called VitalChain that's doing just that, so that, you know, if you're entering into an office building and you want to prove that you have antibodies or that you've been vaccinated, you can show that right there and then, and no one needs to know anything more or maintain that data any longer than you want to show them.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Jonathan Johnson. He's the CEO of Overstock.com. He's also the president of Medici Ventures. So we've been talking about this underlying technology called blockchain, but we haven't spoken about Medici Ventures. Can you tell our listeners what that is all about?
So Medici Ventures is a wholly owned subsidiary or arm of Overstock.com. It is investing in companies that are using blockchain technology to advance banking, to advance voting, to advance identity, to make land titling simpler, to make the stock market and capital markets more efficient. We have investments in about 18 companies that most of them have product in production. They're still startups, but they are changing the way that people do business, whether that's voting on a smartphone, whether it's helping landowners in Africa prove that they own their title, they have title to their land, so they can sell it, devise it, or borrow against it. It's really being a way to help people democratize capital and advance society without all kinds of government or brokers in between.
And I'm really curious, Jonathan, about what prompted you to start accepting Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. And then your core business is, providing, these great products very quickly, good pricing and all of that. Medici Ventures is an interesting wholly owned subsidiary to have. So tell us about how all that happened.
Well, Overstock has always considered itself a technology company first and foremost. We were early adopters of e-commerce in 1999. And when we saw Bitcoin emerge, we decided for two reasons that it would be good to have that be a way that people could pay for product on Overstock. One, we always want to make it so it's easier for people to buy stuff. They want to spend money with Bitcoin versus a credit card, great. The transaction cost is less and lowers the cost of business for us. But second, we wanted to better understand this technology. As a tech company, we saw the early advantages of e-commerce on the internet. We now see the early advantages of holding and transferring digital assets via blockchain technology. So that's how Overstock got into it. It's been an exciting part of our business. I will say our focus today is on the e-commerce business, selling home furnishings. That business has really flourished during the pandemic as people have been at home and wanted to make their home space more livable, maybe extend the walls outside to their patio. We've had a great run in 2020.
Yeah, and again, I was really impressed with, I know there are a lot of moving pieces behind the scenes, but the way that order was, the way the products were presented to me, the order process and the fulfillment, it was really seamless.
Well, soup to nuts, we try and make the user experience really easy and pleasing. And that's everything from being able to search the website to find the products you want. Once you've found it, to read reviews, see different pictures and different angles, make sure the description is accurate so you know what you're getting. Once you've placed the order, keeping you apprised of where it is in the shipping process, when to expect delivery, when it's been shipped, when it's been dropped off at your doorstep. And then, if for some reason you don't like it, to, without having to talk to a customer service agent, log onto the website, initiate a return, maybe request parts that were missing. All of that we try and make as touch-free and as easy as possible.
For our listeners that are interested in hearing about job opportunities, how would they get that information?
So on the Overstock.com website, toward the bottom, there's a career page. We are always looking for good employees. We've used the pandemic time, frankly, to grow our business, to increase our workforce. But anyone that's looking for a job at Overstock, careers.overstock.com is the quickest way to get there.
Okay, very good. Well, we want to thank you once again for joining us on Cool Science Radio. We always love when you're on the program. And thank you, Jonathan.
John, thanks for having me on again. Great, as always, to talk to you.
Okay. Jonathan Johnson, CEO of Overstock.com and president of Medici Ventures.
Always an interesting conversation with Jonathan Johnson. Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.